Rebecca.
The DL Debate, presented by Brendan Devaney, in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love. Book now to enjoy the Sarah's experience.
Hi, welcome one and all to the DL Debate. Thanks so much for listening in, whether that be now beaming out from the famous Mountaintop Studios here on Highland Radio, or listening back on highlandradio.com, Spotify or iTunes. Another packed show in store for you this evening with some great guests as ever. I have an interview from Rory Kavanagh coming up, former Donegal and current St Union's great. I have one of the legends of Tyrone, three-time All-Ireland winner, Enda McGinley, for a chat and a look across all the club action in Ulster. And also, from the fabulous Jim McGuinness years, we have Adam Spear in the line and a story about, I suppose, the great input that he had in strength and conditioning at the time with Donegal. But first up, we look to Donegal and action at the weekend. Of course, championship in the senior and intermediate coming up next week. There was regional leagues. But in hurling, we start with hurling, and we're looking at a big two possibly coming down the line between Buncrana and Satanta. But if anything, Buncrana, even at home, weren't able for the power of Satanta, who really went about them 421 to 11 points. I mean, some serious scoring there coming down the line. Jack O'Loughlin tried his best for Buncrana with 7 points, but David Coulter with 11 points and an amazing 2-6 from Jared Gilmore from play, really setting Satanta apart in club hurling in Donegal at the minute. And in the ladies' championship, after tournament's big one last week, they're sitting waiting on the winners of Glenfun and Neville. And Neville, I suppose, really put it up to Glenfun. It ended up 119 Glenfun, 215 Neville. And really, the story of the day is the scoring exploits of two of the Glenfun players. Unbelievable stuff. I mean, Yvonne Bonner with 7 points, but Karen Guthrie with 112. I mean, unbelievable scoring and setting up a mouth-watering clash now between themselves and Terman in the ladies' senior championship. And in the intermediate championship, I was in Balbuffet yesterday. St Junan's again falling at the last hurdle in that intermediate final. St Noel's full value for their 116-29 victory. And I suppose it just shows you the balance between different games. St Noel's 10 different scores on the day, so different from the Glenfun performance, but 10 different scores. You know, with 26 minutes gone, the sides were level. St Junan's were well in the game, but after that, St Noel's pulling away and proving worthy winners. And in the intermediate junior championship, we had wins for Downings and Mavull. And Downings and Convoy, I suppose, looking like the two teams that are going to be in those semi-final slots and suppose the favourites of the competition. Mavull possibly dark horses. So our junior championship really hotting up as we look forward to the senior and intermediate championships next week. And as I said in the intro there, Rory Kavanagh joined me yesterday, and we turn our attention now to what he has to say. I was just thinking, Rory, I can only imagine from the management perspective, players, and particularly young players, to have somebody of your calibre and experience still in the dressing room, vital, vital.
Aye, listen, you know, I suppose it gets no easier as you get the wrong side of 30, and, you know, in the games that quick at the minute, especially, you know, as you progress through the championship. But I suppose, listen, Richie was looking for a good competitive squad there at the beginning of the year, and I think he's got that now. He's a lot of boys there fighting for places on the team, no more than myself, and it's good. It brings a wee sort of an edge to training, Brendan, and naturally boys want to be playing and things like that there. So, you know, whatever I can offer, I'm more than glad to help out. So it's good at the minute, and we have another big challenge now against Bundoran this weekend.
And tell me, just talking about Richie and the management, the Hurley and the lads, are they keeping you for the big stuff? Are they keeping you rested up on ice? Is Kavanagh going to explode into this championship?
No, listen, I'm mad to get in, Brendan, but I can't force my way back into that team at the minute, you know, because, as I said, like, we have a lot of experience there, you know, inter-county experience with 5 or 6 of the lads involved in that. It was unfortunate that young Connor Marson got the bad injury that he did, and it rules him out. But look, there's more men there that are more than able to come in and fill that spot. And as I said, like, there's 5 or 6 boys there champing at the bit to get in. So it's a good way to be, and it's where we need to be going into big games now against Bundoran in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, tough injuries. Listen, Roy, just about the championship this year, the different format. I know with the COVID thing, it's been very strange for the fans and that, but the actual format of the championship, have you enjoyed it? Do you think it's something that could stay?
Well, look... I do agree with the proposals first and foremost about, you know, the separate inter-county and club seasons. I think that is the way forward. There's more clarity for players. They can plan better, you know, inter-county managers and club managers can plan their seasons accordingly. So I think that's definitely a good idea. Whether the GAA bring that in, it remains to be seen. It'll have to be passed at Central Council and all that, so that can take up quite a bit of time. But I'm hoping, you know, with the whole lockdown, that it has shown that it can be done, and it is something that they'll progress with. But our own structure in Donegal, look, we had four games there, good games, like every one of them. You had to be really at it from the get-go, Brendan. You know, obviously we were aiming to get a home quarter final draw, and we managed to secure that. So, you know, you still see the big scores that the Glentys and Gidors and Kilcares and these teams are putting up, and people look at it and saying, well, look, the top four are way ahead of everybody else. But I don't really, you know, see that. You know, Bundoran will be quietly fancying themselves now coming to O'Donnell Park, and you've seen what they done last year against Gidor. So, you know, maybe the gap is as big as people are making out, and you know, we will certainly have to be wary. But I think with games, definitely, like players want to play games, and having an extra game, we had four, whether it was last year it would have been three in the group stages, has helped everybody, and it's helped managers, you know, bet in players without much maybe training time and things like that, you know.
And yeah, Roy, I suppose Bundoran's last performance in particular, you know, completely blowing our draw away, means that they're coming into this game, they're very much an unproven side, and I think at this stage the very first game we just played down in Bundoran counts for nothing.
No, definitely not. Brendan, you know, they were missing maybe two or three players, if I'm right, that day as well. So they seem to be building nicely, you know. After our game, obviously, was a defeat for them. But then after that, they seem to get players back and quietly going about their business and getting big wins. And the way that they sort of dismantled our draw definitely sent a shot across our bow that we'll need to be ready, and we can't take anything lightly, you know.
Yeah, and I think, Roy, as well as that, you know, if you're going to win a championship, you need tight games, you need tough games that are going to be competitive. And I'm looking at some of the games where the big four, as we keep calling them, have won too easy. They learn nothing from that. They go away with, an empty feeling. So I think from a unit's perspective, you know, they'll want a big challenge. Bundoran, of course, are coming to win the match, but certainly it's the kind of game where you'll find out things in a tough championship game, and that's what you want.
Definitely. I think, you know, we've played Kilcare, you know, and got a real good game there as well, and nothing easy, I suppose, against St Michael's and the way they set up the last day out as well. So look, Bundoran will definitely fancy their chances of taking a scalp, and they'll probably see St Junan's as maybe the easier of the big four. So that's the way they'll probably be seeing it, and they'll go in with real confidence, because as I said, they got the wins under the belt in the last few games. So we'll have to approach it, you know, it's do or die now anyway, Brendan. That's the message we're getting across to all the players. It's, you know, there's no second chances from here on in, and I think that all our squad anyway understand that, and we know that you can't go out with any sort of poor attitude or anything like that, because you get caught out, you know.
Yeah, sure. And just finally, what is the championship medal haul you're going for this year? Have you counted them?
I haven't even considered that. We're a long way away yet from the championship medal.
Good man. Roy, listen, just on Adam Spear, we're doing a feature on him this week on the show, and I thought straight away back to you. Obviously, early on in the podcast, you were one of the first guys we had on doing a life story. We had to spread you across two. There was so much in there with that brilliant book. That, you know, it was great for me to kick off with that. But you, of all the players from that time, Roy, in terms of the body change and what Adam brought, in terms of you would have been like a wing half midfielder. You were strong, you were fast, but you probably hadn't got that bulk, and that's something that Adam added to your physique in those years.
You know, you see all the top teams now. You see, even take Dublin for example, Brendan, and the way that, you know, they seem to one or two players. Like one year, I remember it was Mannion who completely changed his body shape. And he was just this all action full forward, and he was able to come out and dispossess people, take scores. Another year it was Kieran Kilkenny, again totally changed his physique. Yeah. And you see it even in the top level of soccer as well, like Bayern Munich this year. Yeah. You've seen it with Coutinho, and you've seen it with Grotzky, I think his name was. You know, totally changed. And like, it has an impact. It has a big impact on performance.
See, from early years, I suppose, from Donegal, there was small bits of S&C, but never anything. There was a quantum leap in Adam's time. You basically went doubled up in the amount of training you're doing, and there already was a massive amount of training going on, but it was more just your aerobic type training. Like you, the regime that you took on, Rory, was it three mornings a week in the gym before work? And the diet change.
Five.
Right. Three would have been a lot. So five mornings in the gym. You know, some huge undertaking, right? And listen, the rewards came. It was a magical story. But you needed somebody with the right abilities, that somebody had the know-how to marry the gym, the training on the pitch, the diet, pulled it all together. That was Adam's job. That's what he brought.
Aye, like, listen, you know, everything has to be taken care of now in an inter-county setup. Like, whether that's, you know, the management, coaching staff, to the doctors, to the physios, the physical therapists, and to the S&C coaches, and everybody's working in tandem to, you know, and you know, getting the best out of the players. So, like, as you say, Adam did that brilliantly. Like, you know, he was the expert in his chosen field. He knew, you know, when we needed pushed, there was plenty of Spearsy specials in there, you know, during the week, you know.
The Spearsy special, yeah, I've heard of this.
There were real intensive sessions in the morning, you know, and they were also good in that they knew when you needed your rest days. They knew your body, you know. They began to know you, you know, intimately, because you were spending so much time with them. So, as I said, getting the right people in their chosen fields is invaluable, you know.
Yeah, so that was Rory Kavanagh. He's primed and he's ready. And yes, looking forward so much to hearing this input of Adam Spear, because I think there was, you know, certainly the background team for Donegal, we know all about the management and the players. So much went on in the background, and Adam's part of that was vital. And next up, we're going to hear his story. Adam, you were an athlete of some note yourself. Obviously, you come out with the qualifications for S&C in it, but how did the whole tie-in with Jim McGuinness come about?
I don't know about the whole athlete thing now. all you can do is do your best. You compete with everyone in front of you. But yeah, how that came about, I suppose. So I'm thinking there now, earlier on this morning, that's literally 10 years ago this month, which just seems like a lifetime ago, probably is. No, basically, I think in 2010, when the Donegal under-21s at that stage had their run to the final, we just crossed paths, and he asked me to take a session with the guys in the Clannery, and so I'd done that for him, and then it became a second session. And then, so it was after that, their campaign was finished for them players. Jim obviously got the senior job then into that winter, so that's, he just asked me to come on and take over the S&C role with the senior county team. And that's how it came about, really, in essence.
And Adam, tell me, and you have to be honest here, what kind of shape were Donegal in before you got them? No, you don't have to be critical of anybody else, because let's be honest, Adam, there wasn't really much S&C being done, so it wasn't as if there was a different program going on. But obviously Donegal, in terms of where you took them, I mean, you could see that the changes in people's. Were you surprised at what shape they were in, or were you just like, right, this is my program, that's what we're going to do?
Well, I think for me, I suppose, coming from the background of you know, endurance training or triathlon or running, I think we were always used to training, you know, 5-6 days a week, twice some days. And I think for me, I always found it strange that these guys didn't do that. But I suppose if you look at it, 2010 and 2011, I would kind of class it as kind of a hinge moment, where basically it was the first time in probably GAA that the players and athletes became focused on talent and ability, especially opportunity. So they obviously had the talent, and they had the ability, but I think they never got the full opportunity to reap the rewards of what they're capable of, because they weren't the type of athlete that they should have been, I suppose. you know, that he said it was training Tuesday, Thursday, maybe a game of the weekend. And I think in between that, the gym or the S&C type work was just basically something you were given to do, and it wasn't strategized, it wasn't periodized, it wasn't set up to be done all the time as a fundamental package of your being a GAA County player.
And Adam, do you know, from when we were used to train, you know, there's kind of thing, train a day, rest a day type thing. You know, from meeting you, I remember meeting you years ago in the Clanry, and I was struck by you straight away in terms of how much you trained and how little kind of regard you had for rest, for want of a better word. I guess, Adam, the difference was, I suppose, upper body, lower body. At the time, it was all really aerobic. As you said, there was some effort to do a bit of weights, but nothing around that, I suppose, that explosive power. And that's what you brought. And it, but it was a huge buy-in, just Tati Roy there, like five gym sessions, you know, most of them in the morning before work. I mean, it's a massive undertaking for anybody to get involved in, Adam. And it was a complete sea change. But of course, it led almost like within the second year to the ultimate prize.
Well, I think when I suggested this whole thing about doing the gym first thing in the morning before work, it was laughed off. And as I said to the guys, it's the smartest move to make if we're going to have to try and train really hard for an hour and a half, 2 hours on a Tuesday and Thursday. We need to really try and implement this program where we can go gym on the Monday and the Friday, you know, in the mornings as far away as possible from the pitch-based sessions, because there's going to be an effect of DOMS and there's muscle soreness after this gym work, especially the intensity we went at the start. So we try to put together a structured week that we could get the most out of the players as often as possible. And if you look at the word, like, I mean, fitness is defined as the ability to complete a task. So, I mean, If Jim, as a manager, has a task in mind for these players, if they haven't got the physical attributes to do these things, then we had to try and devise a program that could give him the players he wanted, play the system he wanted to play. So I suppose once he had a vision of the type of players he wanted and what their jobs would entail, then so we sat down and went through each player and he goes, look, this player needs X, Y, and Z. So I kind of tried to map out as best I could a progressive plan for them over. Obviously, we had a 4-year plan, but we kind of fast-tracked it to 24 months, thankfully.
You're well ahead of your schedule. I mean, obviously, you made the final in the fourth year, and it could have been a double. Adam, see, in the early days of this thing, you know, you're asking lads for a massive input. You know, was everybody just all in straight away, or how did you find the group? You know, was there group sessions in terms of gym, if there was club players or county players who were club players maybe in the same place? Did they train together? Was it all in there? Did you have to do a bit of pushing to get everybody to believe in this?
It was funny how it came about, because I think initially, you know, Jim himself had earmarked, you know, 4 or 5 players that he thought need a lot of work, or he could fast track those into the shape he wanted quickly. So once I got my hand on those players, we kind of set about doing, it was mostly one-to-ones, to be honest, that kind of August 2010, right through till January or November, to that kind of, they call the famous meeting down in Downings. You know, what kind of shocked me, I suppose, at that first meeting is the physical change on, say, players like Rory and, say, Ryan Bradley and a few others. The players hadn't seen them since they'd finished playing that season, or even the club football had finished. So, I mean, the players generally seemed shocked at the difference of those physical attributes the players had developed over the time off. And I think for me, it showed that even outside of my role, that the players weren't that close outside of the day-to-day football. You know, I presume they just hung out each other all the time in between sessions, but obviously that wasn't the case, because from August right through to November when we first met, you know, you've players like Roy putting on a stone and a half, 2 stone, and you've players like Ryan Bradley taking off maybe a stone and a half over these periods of time. The players were shocked to see this, so they obviously hadn't seen him during that time. And then that was the kind of the process we went through in 2011. And then when we fell short in 2011, my role kind of changed then, because in winter 2012, I spent 5 nights a week driving around the county doing kind of different pods. So I might have done Letterkenny on a Monday night, then it might have been Ardragh, Glenties on a Tuesday night, Gidore on a Wednesday night. You know, so what my role kind of moved around, that actually we travelled around the whole county over the full winter, trying to do the same work I did with those players in a one-to-one in the first year with the whole squad.
Adam, it's some undertaking. I mean, fair play, even from your own setup, Adam. I mean, you obviously had designs and you were doing your S&C as well. You know, your own future. Was this something, Adam, that the time frame around this for you, even in your own job, did you think that this is, the input there was so massive from you as well. I mean, you travel around the whole county, you're taking care of a large squad of people. It was all in.
I think what happened to me there was, I mean, I had worked with GAA teams and club sides for a couple of years, but I came as a typical, you know, somebody who runs, somebody who's fit. They'd bring you in pre-season to get a team fit. Whereas in around 11 and 12, and the whole scene of S&C and the role of this the coach, it became like a full-time position. So the whole thing escalated from a role he'd just snip in and get the guys in shape to basically staying in full-time. I mean, I didn't think when I took the job, I remember at the time, it wasn't like a high, to me, it wasn't a high-profile job, not like it is now. I mean, if you're offered this job now, it's a huge undertaking. You know what's involved. Back then, it wasn't seen to be something you would do 20, 30 hours a week on. Whereas now, if you're given this job now, you know what's going to take. Because even then, I mean, I was away at training camps 3 nights a week, maybe every second weekend over the summer. And yeah, over the 4 years, it proved to be difficult, year 3 and year 4. But I kind of fell in love with the whole GAA and the culture and the players. And I think after the success of 2012, that few days we spent driving around Donegal, even in the quarterfinals, semifinals, and after the first Ulster, I kind of fell in love with the whole fact that people generally in Donegal absolutely adore the footballers and love GAA in general. And I hadn't got that going in, I don't think personally, but I've definitely developed that now, and I've been involved in GAA ever since, and it's something I wouldn't take out of my diary, to be honest.
It's hard not to love us, Adam. That has to happen.
Great punch.
Adam, it's fact. Do you know what fascinates me a lot about this is because, as you said, there was very little S&C before this. It wasn't the type of job where, you know, you're really looking to get involved. So to get players' minds around a team that was, you know, well beaten up in Cross McGlen, and it's, you know, there's the quote of us being McGuinness holding up the thing where somebody had ranked us 19th in Ireland. Like, it's not as if we were knocking on the door of an Ulster in all Ireland. And if we were, I think it's so much easier to bed in this. So you talk about that, the famous meeting in Downing's where Jim set out the plan. Were you setting out a plan at that same time as well? And again, for the lads to buy in was a bit of a case of, right, we've been down so low now, we're willing to give it a go. Was that the feeling that you got?
Definitely from that first meeting. Like I said, personally, I didn't know any of the players really before I started this role. I didn't even know half the names of the players, to be honest. So I came in very raw in terms of that environment. And I think from my own perspective, when you're given this role, you just really take it as a job. So, I mean, you look at the players across the room, and my role and our role, I suppose, as a management team was to try and increase the probability of being successful. And that takes a lot of work. You know, that was down to nutrition, down to training, down to recovery, down to game execution, game plans. And there's a lot of stuff that was entailed in that. And I always kind of looked at stuff and said, you know, when you look at a person even comes into the door of the gym here, one of the things you kind of ask them is, you know, are your goals and habits in line with what you want to achieve? So if they generally sit in the room and they want to win their end in the next 4 years, then the way it was going about, it was never going to happen. So when you're ranked 17th in the country, then it's probably a credible place to be and you deserve that position. But I think in the next 24 months, when they really applied that talent and ability that they had, they created an opportunity for themselves to go all the way. And that's how it proved. And I think we kind of get into how the rest, I mean, GAA now as a whole, it's gone like this all the time. You know, club players are going to gym in the morning, twice, 3 times a week. It's normal now. You know, I think we kind of, not started it, but I think we really initiated this in the county, that whole culture of, you know, doing it right. If you're going, I mean, people who do 5Ks, half marathons, triathlons, I mean, they train twice a day a week. Back pre-2010, footballers didn't. It was training Tuesday, Thursday, match of the weekend, and that was it. Whereas now, GAA, it's a life choice. If you want to be successful in it, whether it's a club or county, you're all in. You know, you eat well, you sleep well, you train well. You manage your day-to-day running of your life around GAA training and being the best athlete you can be so you can be successful.
And you know what, Adam, as well, I'm just thinking, you know, as you're talking there, there's so many aspects of what you do there and why we were so lucky to have you at that time. And I think even psychologically, you know, you've kind of touched on it without saying it there. You know, you had to be the backup. You had to keep encouraging and laying out and pushing people on. And that's not just as simple as putting out the program and saying, there's your diet. You have to really, I suppose, be completely in tune with the one-to-one with each player to get the most from them. And that's something that you did.
Well, a whole part of coaching, I suppose, now, as I kind of broaden my knowledge was over the last couple of years is, you know, I always say that when I go to these teams every season and I do talks, I kind of say, you know, information is nothing with implementation. So basically, a program is only good as the person you hand it to. You know, you can write the best program in the world or the worst program in the world, but if the player's not going to implement it and embrace it and get on with it, then it's really a nothing piece of paper, to be honest. So it's about, so when you get to know players, I do generally like to know players on a personal level in terms of, you know, married, kids, jobs, because when you're trying to get them to buy into your philosophy and what you're trying to do, if you can connect with them on a personal level, it makes your job so much easier. And I think that's what Jim done on a very good level, that, you know, he broke down those barriers where players from different clubs mix more organically during training, on the bus, during mealtime, during meetings. It wasn't literally one group over here, one group over there. And even outside of the season, the 10, 11-month season, you know, those players are still socialising together outside of the season. So I think that bond and that connection between the players and the group and the back room and the whole process was a huge part of the success we had.
Yeah, definitely was. And, you know, information is nothing without implementation. You coaches love those wee sound bites, don't you?
You keep a few of them in the locker for every now and again.
Spearsy especially, I have to pull you up on that in a minute. Adam, I'm just going to ask you, first of all, about the way you married the whole thing of, obviously the lads are training on the pitch and they're doing ball work and that, and obviously that's training. They're doing runs in the pitch. Were you involved in the runs and all those aspects of everything? Did you and Jim plan out, right, this is a session on the pitch, this is going to be this worth to us. Tomorrow the boys in the gym, they're doing compound movements, they're doing power movements, they're doing bulking, but whatever way you wanted to do it. Was everything exactly mapped out and you and Jim and the rest of the coaches in the background team got together to do that? And or was it just by a different time frame in the year, did you update it? Or how did you go about the whole year's programme?
Well, we would have kind of sat down and periodized when we wanted things to get players to peak and players to be in the best possible shape. And in an ongoing process, that would evolve. So basically, the players that came in and say, winter 2010, and come 2011 season, we want them 6 months down the road the following year in the same shape. So for example, whatever shape we got the guys in by March, they'd start that pre-season block in that shape the following year. So we're kind of every 6 months or every year, we're kind of 6 months ahead of ourselves. And I mean, in terms of what goes on now, I mean, the functionality of GPS vests and stat recording and meters per minute metrics, all the stuff the players mentioned have access to now. Back then, it was so new. You know, we didn't have the same knowledge that people would have now in terms of, this is 10 years ago. So, I mean, GPS vests back then, you were spoiled if you got them for a training session or a match, whereas now, there's no team or account doesn't have them for every single session, and they're analysed by a role. Like, I mean, as I said, an S&C coach, our job was to kind of get them fit and in shape. That became a mainstream job in the last probably 8 to 10 years. Statistics analysis and all that GPS data now, that's a literally one or two man job full time inside a squad. I remember sitting in a hotel down in Kildare, and one of the guy in charge of the stats, I spent 6-7 hours in the room doing up all the presentations for the next morning. And at 11:30 at night, I mean, Jim walked in and goes, right, we're changing the tactics for that game next week. Look at this for the next couple of hours. He had to actually wipe out all he'd done and start again. But again, that came from a conversation probably in another room where the management team decided, look, this is not where we're going to play and we're going to change. I think actually it was the Dublin game, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And they seen something and go, right, this is not going to work. They went back into this and the stats guy and said, look, whatever you've done the last 6 hours, I'm sorry, but wipe it. We're going to start again. Go through all the videos and watch for this stuff. And that's the process again. So you can do 8 hours work and have it all thrown in your face in about 8 seconds.
But, again, amazing stuff. I think most people out there, just again, the way I really wanted to highlight your story, it's one of the kind of untold stories, you know, the background team that was there, Donegal. I mean, a lot of people close to camp know about your input, but that's why I wanted to highlight it today. And the actual work, as you said there, you know, you've done hours of work, scrap it, we're doing something else. I mean, there was so much asked of the players, but again, of people like yourselves. And Adam, I just wanted to highlight something that in those years that you were coaching and you pushed our players to the limit, and of course, we got our awards with Ulsters and within All-Ireland, two finals. The injuries aspect, Adam, there was very little injuries. I mean, a huge thing I think of any successful team is, you know, you have Listen, Donegal, it was hard to pick out main players there, but there was certain players I think were vital cogs in our system. We all know who they are. But the fact that everybody was injury-free, you think it was going into that final in 2012, I don't think Donegal could have been in better shape physically and also injury-free. How did you, was there a way, is it recovery, rest, again, put into the programme, Adam? It's just not all push, lads, right to the limit. There obviously has to be that right recovery aspect with the nutrition. So you really marry that all together and get the right result?
There's definitely a push and pull factor to all the training. And I mean, like I said a few times already, you know, you go back 10 years, recovery strategies weren't as in tune and as good as they are now. You know, it was still very green, still very raw. But I mean, it was really, you know, rest days, massage. The problem with recovery, it's very subjective. So you try and take each player and go, look, what's your go-to? I mean, there's certain players in the squad that I'd have hurdles for in the shower room before the match so they could actually do some mobility work over the hurdles pre-warm-up. Other players did extra band work. Some players took gels at halftime. Some players took gels 10 minutes in the second half. So I'd have them in my pocket ready to go. So it's down to individual needs because, like I said, recovery, you can blanket coat the whole team with the recovery session, which is good. They can stretch recovery and do cryotherapy, all the other stuff. But when you get down to the bones of it all, it's each player has different needs. So as best you possibly can do with 35 players, you're trying to get to them in a person we spoke about earlier on and discover what makes them tick. And if they can learn that themselves, if you can teach the players how to mind themselves, that's a massive part of it. So when you're not there, whoever comes in next, the players have acquired enough knowledge that they can make that person's job easier by saying, look, this is what I did last time. This feels really good for me, or I've tried that before, it doesn't work for me. So you're trying to give players more knowledge, and the more you can tell, even now, modern day GA players come in very, very knowledgeable. You can't bluff them. You know, they know their stuff. They've been around, they've worked some good coaches. They know their stuff. They know how to recover. They know how to eat. It's just implementation after that. Like I said before, information and implementation go hand in hand.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Adam, I just have to ask you another question about these Spearsy specials, because the word is on the street is that you were pushing these boys to their limit. There was a session lined out, but no, at the end you had to put an extra bit in just to take them that bit further. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining, because I know from the players, they said at the time, you know, spoken to a lot of them, obviously be close to a lot of them, said that you had them in such great shape that they really felt unbeatable in terms of physically on the pitch. I mean, as any player knows, going into the pitch, your whole fear really is that you want to be strong and powerful, you want to be fit, you know, after that, let your ball play take over. But that would have been always a worry. You took that completely away. But these Spearsy specials, I think you took the boys to their limit with them.
Well, look, it's really about a belief, you know, if you think about a belief system, if the players believe in the work done, you know, when it comes to the crunch, you know, there's no doubt. If you can take away the doubt and the self-belief goes up, you've got a very strong product there. So in terms of these PhD specials, as a few of the guys tend to call them, every now and again, you kind of might call it chaos training, call it what you like, but you might just land in the gym and say, hey guys, we're doing this type of session, which they know is way and beyond what they've done before. But when they all row together and they pull through that session, you know, some might get sick, some might have to bail out near the end, but when they're all doing it, and they're all doing it together, and they're all doing it to the best of their ability, when it comes to the crunch of match day, and it's a one-point game, and there's 10 minutes left, there's no thought pattern of this guy's going to let me down, because they know they've suffered through the same stuff that they've all done through the last 12, 24, 36 months. So by creating these speedy specials, as the guys used to call them, they're just little sessions where we might just completely off the norm, blitz the body, build up some character with them, so when it comes down to it, they're a tighter knit grip.
They certainly
weren't easy.
They weren't. I can only imagine, Adam, you're a tough trainer yourself, and that engine that you have, I think, reflected then into the lads. You certainly put on. And listen, thanks so much for your commitment to Donegal and that magical time under Jim, and sharing your story this evening on the DL Debate.
That's a pleasure, Ben, and thanks for having me on. Cheers.
And now we turn our attention to what's going on across Ulster and my guest, Enda McGinley. And I'm just going to go through some of the bigger teams in Ulster and what's happening in the championship. And Armagh, of course, we're always thinking across McGlenn. They had a tight match with Killeavy, making it into another final. That's coming up with Mahery. And Down, the home of the Ulster Championship, Ulster Champions, of course, who beat our own Niamh Connell and went in All-Ireland final against Curragh Finn. They lost last time out to Warren Point, but bounced back with a victory at the weekend against Burn, 111 to 9 points to book their quarter-final place in Monaghan. The semi-finals now are decided as Ballybay against Enniskeen, Carrickmacross against Scotstown. Of course, last year's champions Clontibret bowed out already. And Fermanagh, Derrygonley are still on the hunt for six in a row after they beat Rosslea 10 points to 6. And in Cavan, it's at semi-final spot as well, where Castlebrahan are going for three in a row. They're in the semi-finals along with Cavan Gaels, Kingscourt and Crosslough. But of course, the two major championships we look at outside of Donegal is Derry and Tyrone. And if a man on the line that knows a thing or two about the two of them, as it happens this season, it is of course Airgill Kieran, great, and Tyrone great, now Swatra manager Enda McGinley.
Hello Brenton.
How's things today, Enda?
Things are good. Things are very good in Airgill because we had survived by the skin of our teeth last night in a huge battle with Dromore. So anytime your club comes through a game like that, it's very hard to annoy you the day after. But yeah, things are heating up brilliantly, aren't they? The raft of names you went through, all the big dogs are sort of still there. You've got Cross McGlenn in Armagh, you've Kilcoon down, you've Clontibret, you've Derrygonley, you've Castlerahan. So all the big dogs, no matter about the strange year, they're all still very much in the fight. And of course, with Derry and Tyrone, Derry just starting this weekend in their championship proper, and Tyrone now down to the last four. So everything is it is brilliant from a club point of view. I think anybody associated with GAA is absolutely loving it at the minute.
Yeah, and listen, I'm absolutely fascinated by the Tyrone championship in particular. You know, as you said, coming right down the wire with Dromore yesterday, there was so many games. Now, I know it was knockout and they decided to go that way, which was different from all the other counties, but there have been so little between the teams. There's been so many draws, extra time, penalties. It seems like almost every game has gone down the wire. Thrilling stuff, because here in Donegal, there's been a couple of decent tight matches, but a lot of them, you know, have been walkovers by the bigger teams. That just doesn't seem to happen in Tyrone.
No, things are very, very tight. I suppose the draw feeds into that too, but certainly in the senior ranks within Tyrone, the number of different winners that Tyrone has had over the past 8-9 years is well storied, and how nobody is able to do back-to-back, and there's single titles across maybe 8 different teams at this stage, which is unheard of throughout any of the other counties. Because of that, at the start of any given year, all 8 of those teams, and a couple of other teams from outside that, are saying, we can do this, we're close enough to launch a challenge. And so all of them teams prepare at the very, very top level of preparations. The players expect it and the clubs provide it. With that, then whenever it comes to championship action, there is nothing between the teams, and it is down to your performance on the day, a wee bit of a rub of the green here and there. And particularly, I think, in this year, given that teams have only had, what, maybe 2 months really of preparation, the level that they're playing at is hugely impressive. To be able to do that after only 2 months, it probably is helping the football almost, because teams are a wee bit rawer. They're not as maybe fine-tuned tactically. They're not closing down the opposition just as much as maybe they might have done if you 8 months of sort of tactical training under your belt. And for that reason, I think we're being treated to a special, special championship. I was listening last night. My brother's involved with Gorton in the intermediate championship. And they were playing Eglish, who would be one of the big favourites in the media championship last night. And the commentators, Tyrone, were streaming it as well on their TV channel. And the commentator was Jet Tracy, who you would know well from our commentating days. And Jet had been to the other games that day, the Arbogue Dungannon game in the senior championship and the Airgill Dromore game. And you could tell he was just exhausted by the end of the day, but almost giddy with the excitement, because, of course, Greencastle, or Eglish and Gorton, went back to time and went to penalties. And it was a phenomenal game of football in Omagh. So right throughout the board, it's been a brilliant championship for the teams that go out. Dromore, that lost to Airgill yesterday by the narrowest margin, they'll be sore and they'll not be enjoying it too much today. But it is certainly a championship we've always been proud of in Tyrone, and thankfully it's living up to its bill.
Yeah, we're at, so Trillick play Cole Island, Dungannon play Airgill Kieran. Donaghy kicking him with 114. I know the game went to extra time, Enda, but 114.
No, I think it was 14 points.
Do you know what? I thought myself, I wasn't too sure if that's a bit of a typo there. Well, I'll not blame the poor Irish News. They have brilliant coverage, in fairness. And of course, you're one of your employers. So.
Somebody's. Dungannon got 23 points and he went in with 14, including Very good. Absolute spectacular last minute equaliser, last kick of the game to take the game to extra time, you know. So a huge performance by Paul Donahue. And again, a player we wouldn't have heard very much about. And I think that's the brilliance of having the club championship before the county championship. Everybody gets a really good look at all the players that the county manager has available to him, and it really informs them discussions too.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to say, somebody said to me yesterday, was there anything Declan Bonner in this championship that stood out? But someone like Paul Donahue, I was going to ask you about him. I can't say I know that, but someone who's able to kick 14 points in a senior game, particularly in a tight, tense affair like that, has to be someone Mickey Hart would be thinking about.
Well, absolutely, because obviously he's lost Cathal McShane and thrown other forwards, while Mark Bradley has really stood up. The other forwards have all had multiple chances, and Throne has struggled bottom line in the forward division. So you're always looking for top line talent, but you know well that there's a big difference between playing well for your club and standing out in a club championship game and doing it for county. But certainly it would suggest that you would merit at the very least a look to see how you manage that step up.
And then just looking at the coverage of Tyrone has been fantastic, you know, how the games have been put together, the whole aesthetics of it, the camera views and that, you know, have been first class in the streaming. But it looks like it's not just me that's very interested in it. RTE are also interested. They've piped in. They're going to show the two semi-finals live as well.
Yeah, I'm actually with RTE next weekend doing that, so it'll be brilliant. Look, from a Tyrone point of view, you know well, like, I know you're a Donegal man, but you spend many an hour in Tyrone, and you know we're a wee bit mad about our football in that part of the woods, and we're proud of our club football, we're proud of our county football, and we have had plenty of bad press, would it be fair to say. We don't have the best reputations, and I personally, obviously, very biased in that, but I think it's largely undeserved. And the TG Cahar covered the Trillick Killy Cahar game on Friday night, which was the first televised game to go to penalties, and it was a brilliant game of football, a real top quality game of football, so it was great for that to go out like that. The two semi-finals is a big stage for Tyrone to be putting its club football on. It's great that RTE is covering it. I'm just hoping that they produce the type of football and produce the displays that we're used to in Tyrone and why we're proud of it. So it is a big stage. It's great that it's been covered. As an Airgill man, there's only one thing I really care about, to be honest, and that's that we secure a place in the county final. Yeah. But from a Tyrone point of view, it'd be great if we could advertise ourselves in maybe a more positive light than sometimes we're portrayed.
Yeah, I just think this goes back to the Northern thing and getting under people's skins, as you did around that time, and there's always been this in the background. Me and you've spoken this many times before, but just on the penalties there, Enda, you mentioned it there, and Nigel Shawnee, the Trillick manager, has come out and said, listen, the two captains should toss, pick a side, which way you're going, the ball should be thrown up in the air, and the team that gets a first score wins. Where do you stand on the penalties? Because to me, it's very un-GA-like to settle a game on penalties. It's not something you ever do, is hit the ball on the ground, really. You might have a penalty taker in the team, but by and large, no one else is practising penalties, and it's a bit unfair. You said, even though the preparation hasn't been as big as it should have been getting to the championship, but for a team to go out with everything that's been put into it on penalties, I'm never comfortable with that in GA.
No, even soccer people are uncomfortable, and have always said it's a tough way to lose a game. And I think because it's new in Gaelic, it's not our way of doing things. Really, it becomes particularly difficult to watch. It's great if you're on the right side of it. You obviously never care if you come through it. But I don't think anybody feels it's the ideal situation. I think we all agree that in the condensing of the season that has increasingly been talked about, and condensing things to 5 months maybe for a county and 5 months for a club, then there will be a need to be able to have some situation that we're not at a third or fourth replay, which can happen. I think a lot of these matches were that good. I don't think anybody would have an issue in seeing a replay if the calendars can allow a bit of space, even a midweek game. So that would be my first preference, if it's even after extra time that it goes to a replay. After that, my initial reaction was always at a golden point. Every training session I ever had, if you're playing a bit of a game, you'll hear the shout, next scores the winner. And I think that would be a more equitable way of doing it. The problem with that is, of course, it allows a team to enjoy an advantage if you happen to be playing with the wind. Yeah. When the conditions are sufficient, then that is a definite advantage. Or maybe on some club pitches, there's scoring ends and there's downhills and there's lots of other factors. So the penalties removes all of that from the situation and makes it very clean cut. And it is hugely exciting. Like, I sat up last night, obviously, because my brother was involved. I had my three wee ones around me and was videoing the final penalty. It was almost into sudden death. Videoing the 10th penalty, Gorch and were hitting it. My wee girl, who was six beside me, and on the video you can hear say, "Oh my God." You know, and then the rest of the children go mad. So penalties is hard to beat from a drama entertainment point of view.
Yeah, tough stuff, isn't it? And just looking across the Derry there, Slotnealer playing for Glenmore, the quarter final stage, Loupton Given, Donovan Rossa and Lavi, and of course your own team Swatra and Banagher. How did the Swatra tie up come along? I mean, you're obviously topped your group end, are things going really well there? Are you enjoying your time in Derry football, and is there much of a change between that and in Tyrone that you see?
I enjoy the training, Declan. I'm working with a good bunch of boys that I really, really enjoy working with. I enjoy winning matches. I am terrible when it's tight and when we're losing. It really affects me badly. But I'd say that's the same as any manager. I've really enjoyed it, I have to say. The championship obviously is what it's down to, and there is sort of three teams that are realistically ahead of the rest. That'd be Slotnealer, Glen and Motherfelt. The rest are very, very even, and there's lots of teams there with decent championship tradition. Derry club scene itself has an amazing tradition at Ulster club level. The teams will come out of it. Like, I would suggest there's maybe more in that top bracket, that top Slotnealer, Glen, Motherfelt, that top club bracket. I'd suggest there's more teams within that bracket within Tyrone. But in terms of that, the teams that emerge from Derry are always as good as there is in Ulster, really. And that really says it all. In terms of, we've had this sort of wee league group, there was two stronger groups within it and two sort of weaker groups within it. So the fact that we have topped our group might be a wee bit fortuitous. But yes, it's all up in the air. But you're expecting them three big teams to keep surviving. After that, I think there'll be plenty of upsets elsewhere.
Yeah, fascinating stuff, Ben. And listen, I do a bit of work with you at BBC doing comedies. It's always good to catch up, and I'll definitely be tuning in on Saturday evening to watch it on RTE. Good luck with that, sure, and I will see you soon. Thanks for joining me this evening, and good luck, obviously, in the championship as well with Swatra.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Cheers, Enda. Take care, mate. Bye. Thanks so much to Enda McGinley there, top class as usual. Thanks also to Adam Spear and Rory Kavanagh, my guests this evening. Next week we're back with DL Debate, the championship. I'll chat you then.
The DL Debate, presented by Brendan Devaney, in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love. Book now to enjoy the Sarah's experience.